You're tuned to Holland. This is Radio Netherlands.
Talking to.
Yes, this is Radio Netherlands' Tuesday interview program. Today, Susan Calland talking to Professor Jan Bastiaans, Dutch pioneer in the recognition and treatment of the KZ or concentration camp syndrome. Now approaching retirement on June the 1st, Professor Jan Bastiaans has devoted 40 years of his life to the treatment of people suffering from the so-called KZ or concentration camp syndrome. This can best be described as a reaction to extreme lack of freedom or extreme isolation in the broadest sense, and to extreme confrontation with inhumanity. For many years, Professor Bastiaans was director of the Jelgersma Clinic at the University of Leiden, where he first identified the syndrome and pioneered a therapy for its treatment. Although called concentration camp syndrome, and many of its sufferers can trace their condition back to wartime experiences, the syndrome is not limited to this sort of patient. It can also affect people who are faced with other types of wartime experience, or those who have been held hostage in other situations, such as in trains and buildings, and who are in one way or another faced with imminent death. The syndrome is often triggered off years after the event, and for this reason, Professor Bastiaans has been kept busy for many years with his therapy. Apart from normal psychotherapy, the professor has made use of controlled doses of LSD-25 and psilocybin in his therapy, which resulted in much controversy in the late 60s and early 70s. The professor's methods have a fairly high success rate of treatment, and he is at present training younger personnel who it is hoped will be able to continue his method of treatment. Susan Callan took the opportunity to talk to Professor Bastiaans for us and began by asking him to briefly explain exactly what is KZ or concentration camp syndrome.
The concentration camp syndrome is a complex syndrome. A syndrome in itself is only a complex of symptoms, but the KZ syndrome is a complex of developments of the personality, of symptoms, of diseases in the years following the disaster. And I have described this KZ syndrome very systematically already in the 50s. So my doctors, my thesis in 1957 dealt with the late consequences of war stress and especially the psychosomatic consequences. And in this book I described very carefully that there are four phases that are characteristic for the KZ syndrome. The first phase is the so-called shock phase, and that you lose consciousness if you are in a very difficult situation, in jail or concentration camp. The second phase is the alarm phase, and that is the phase of fear, anxiety, panic, irritability. The third phase is the so-called adaptation phase. Slowly, after the war, people try to adapt themselves to the post-war society and reality. And the last and fourth phase, in which many war victims of the Second World War are in now, is the exhaustion phase. So this course of events has been described by me very systematically, and my first publication dealt with 300 war victims, which I examined in the years 1947 till 1957.
There must be theories that you were developing as you went along with no previous experience and no previous studies of this kind of work, that in following through these patients as they went through the stages, you were learning from them and developing the theories in that way.
Yes, that's true. But I must tell you the following. Some people who have been under stress in wartime go through these phases very rapidly, and even after a few years are in an exhaustion state, whereas the strongest ones only after 40 years reached the end point. So I have treated all victims who were very ill in 1947 already, and I have treated people in the last years who have not suffered at all till they were 70 years of age, and then suddenly all the difficulties they had to go through came to the fore.
So in some of the earlier cases, the syndrome has been curable.
Oh yes, I treated the first war victim, a comrade of mine who worked in Amsterdam in wartime in illegal situations. I treated that man with my special technique in 1947. He is still well known. I treated many more with different methods. And my main aim was to find out which kind of technique is the most suitable for the future, because there are so many, many victims all over in the world. And I had been trained. I was so happy to get the training as a classical psychoanalyst, because I started that very soon after the war, and I became director of the National Psychoanalytic Institute already in 1954. And then I studied and investigated which kind of technique is the best technique for the treatment of people suffering from severe traumatic neurosis, as it was called in these times.
You said also that it's not only victims of concentration camps, but victims of, as you mentioned, hostage takings and other similar difficult situations, people kept in prisons, in jails, in closed-off situations, kept in isolation, who also suffer from these symptoms.
Yes, you can speak about all the consequences of all kinds of man-made disasters, also disasters as a result of the climate or other situations which are not caused by human beings, but which include at least traumatization of the personality.
In view of that, do you think it's a good thing today that psychiatry is generally more popular? We read more about it in our newspapers and magazines, and we're more aware of the fact generally that if we have problems, we should feel free to talk about them with doctors or family or whoever else we feel close to.
Fortunately, because formerly, and still even now, there is a tremendous fear to be stigmatized as a psychiatric patient. And I always tell people, also in the mass media, it is good to speak about it. And if you have gone through such a hell, then it is very good to talk about it. We had that also in Holland during the hostage-taking actions in the 70s. I was the chairman of the committee that investigated all the consequences of these hostage-taking actions in Holland in the 70s. We did a lot of research here in the department, and we had talks and interviews with all the ex-hostages. And then we offered therapy immediately. And do you know what happened? It was miraculously many refused because of fear to be stigmatized to be a psychiatric patient. And I had told to the ministry and to the government, let us start now at an early point, because in 1945 there were no facilities for psychotherapy of war victims.
In his doctoral thesis in 1957, Professor Bastiaans describes the psychosomatic consequences of the stress of war in concentration camps. Since then, he has published many papers, articles and books, gaining him much acclaim and recognition both in Holland and internationally. He has been president of the International College of Psychosomatic Medicine and a member of the college board for 12 years, a member of the General Committee of the World Psychiatric Association, and was for many years director of the Jelgersma Clinic at the University of Leiden, a world-renowned centre in its field. In 1961, Professor Bastiaans began using hallucinogenic drugs in his therapy, which resulted in an optimal combination of psychoanalysis and psychodrama. The use of these drugs was to cause something of a furore in public and scientific circles, but the professor always defended their use and stressed the importance of the patient being properly prepared and having sufficient trust in both the therapist and the therapy.
I learned the technique in the UK and in America, and in the 50s already and the 60s we had seven psychiatrists in Holland who worked with it, and I made reports on it, and I treated people from abroad, and we had many lectures on it and made films on it. But suddenly, in the last 15 years, it is a matter of mythology. I was attacked tremendously by the Scientology Church, who attack all the doctors who are using active means for treatment of patients, surgeons also. They pretended that people became hanged themselves after LSD sessions, and that was not true at all. But I can tell you the following. I was confronted with a case in New York where a man who misused LSD came down from the big hotel because he had the feeling at that moment that he was a bird, that he could fly.
Professor Bastiaans then pointed out to Susan Calland that this example illustrates the fact that you can't administer LSD for therapeutic reasons if the patient is not monitored constantly afterwards. And the professor places great stress on this point.
If you use LSD or psilocybin, you must be every minute with your patient for 3 hours, for 4 hours, if necessary, for 6 hours. And also with assistance of nurses or residents, etc.
What's the value of it to those patients? How do they feel and how are they when they come out of it?
That differs from session to session, but what I found was that usually the reaction is positive. There is a facilitation of the therapeutic process. Formally, as a classical psychoanalyst, I needed at least 600 till 800 hours in 4 to 5 years for efficient treatment of war victims, and with the facilitation of the psychoanalytic process, I can help people in the time of 50 sessions, 50 hours, 100 hours, but no more 600 or 800. So in Holland, yearly, only 400 people can be in proper psychoanalytic treatment, war victims or not war victims, normal neurotics, if you call it. But there are so many victims in our world that we need techniques which rather rapidly lead to recovery of the patient. And that is what I did. But I am not only using LSD. In the first years, in the years between 1945 and 1960, I worked with narcoanalysis. And narcoanalysis was used already in the end of the Second World War in the USA, in England, and all countries for the soldiers coming back from the battlefield.
What is this narcoanalysis?
With narcoanalysis, you inject some milligrams of pentothal sodium. That is a very mild barbiturate. People sleep for 10 minutes or 50 minutes, and then they are in a dreamy state, and in this dreamy state, they express what they go through. And this lasts nearly 1 hour, 90 minutes, and nearly every day, even now, I use this technique to give them the opportunity to ventilate hidden emotions, repressed emotions, hidden experiences, repressed experience, which they could not express in a conscious state. Nowadays, I do it so that I inject sodium pentothal. We usually do that in the evening, when it is quiet in the environment. They sleep for 10 minutes, and then they start to talk or to cry or to ventilate their emotions. And you confront them, so to say, with the different layers of their consciousness, and the deeper layers, the less deeper layers, and real consciousness. So the unconscious and the consciousness come together, step by step. And sometimes it is so that in the deepest layers of the unconscious, people know something or remember something which they cannot remember when they are entirely conscious.
And is it almost as if dealing with it in this state, they can then put it behind them and not be bothered by these things again?
When we have such a session, they are confronted the next day with the tape recording of the session. In the years 1945 till 60, we did not have the minor cassettes. So we could not give the cassettes to the people to that they could have an opportunity to listen to the cassettes at their home. Nowadays they do. And this saves us a lot of time because they listen with their husbands, their partners, sometimes with professionals. And it is the repetition of what they have gone through slowly that leads to a kind of satiation process. At the end, they say, now we know it. Now it does not disturb us anymore. Now the images are in the right spot in my skull. They are not confused anymore.
After that piece of Chopin, we're back talking to Professor Jan Bastians. Professor Bastians, what was it originally, if we can go back to the beginning of your medical career and your student days, what was it that led you to become a psychiatrist?
Well, I tell you, I started my medical study in 1936. And I had much interest for psychology. At that time, there was not much psychology for medical students. So I combined my medical study also with the study of philosophy. And for some years, I studied philosophy. But then I found that philosophers are fond of problems, but not always fond of solving the problem. So I was a practical young student, and I was a chairman of students' committees and societies, etc. And then there came the war. And I was one of the first students from Amsterdam University, so-called rector of one of the major students' societies, and I was dismissed from the Amsterdam University because of my protest against the Germans. By that, I was more or less safe for some time, but then slowly I became a member of the underground resistance, and I certainly had been deported if I had not had an accident and became, I got a paralysis of my right leg, and I had to continue for some years as an invalid through The Hague and Amsterdam. And even in that situation, I could do some illegal work and could do some medical work. And after the war, I got my license and started internal medicine first and later on in psychiatry. And during war, legal, in a legal way or illegal way, I had been confronted with surgery, anesthesia, etc. So I became a real doctor. And then, working in laboratories, I had the feeling, well, I'm more a man for human contact. Huh? I was very interested in what was done in our medical labs, but I could talk easily with people. I had started my analytic career and training, so I became psychiatrist. And in 1951, I was settled as a specialist in psychiatry in Amsterdam, and I became one of the senior people of the Amsterdam Department of Psychiatry, University Department. In 1954, I became director of our National Psychoanalytic Institute in Amsterdam. So apparently people thought that I could do it, and I was director of that institute for 9 years. And during these 9 years, I was highly interested to do research and to measure the effects of psychotherapy. And as a result of these techniques and measurements, sponsored by the famous Professor Eysenck in London, we found that it is not so easy to help people, even severely traumatized people, properly.
You yourself had experience of the war. It must be very difficult for people today, for colleagues of yours working with war victims, when the victim, or rather the patient, when the patient can turn around and say, you don't understand what I'm going through, you don't understand what I'm talking about, because you don't have the experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always tell them, not everybody and every doctor needs to go through every disease to know what a disease may be. But you must have some empathy with regard to what other people went through. And if I talk with war victims, they feel immediately he knows what we have gone through. But if the residents of today, who are 30 years of age now, talk with these people, they have the feeling, well, that is a war of 400 years ago, centuries ago, and it's more difficult to feel exactly what these people had to go through. But fortunately, there are younger doctors nowadays too who are so free and open that they learn to communicate, so in the end, it is possible.
Well, continuing on the path of your career now, in 1967, you took a slightly different direction or used a different medium. You made a film about your work. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I tell you, I published many papers since and my doctoral thesis in 57, but people did not read that. And then I thought we must make clear to the world what we are doing. And then, with the help of the famous cineast Louis van Gasteren in Amsterdam from Euro Television, we made that film here in the department with a volunteer, a war victim. And that film was presented in 69. It took 2 years to collect the money to make that film. And then I invited the Queen, and that was a good situation. The Queen came in Tuschinski in The Hague, and then everybody came and the newspapers came, and suddenly there was much more interest for this topic.
It certainly focused the interest of the world on the work that you were doing. What were the consequences?
Well, I am not the only one who is doing this work. Already years ago, I had friends and colleagues who do the same. But I had the idea we must do more and to improve the techniques. So I concentrated all my efforts on it. And unfortunately, only few doctors really were able to cooperate or to give their spare time and extra time for this kind of work. Because it is so easy to give pills or to talk half an hour with a patient, but to realize sessions or 3 hours, 4 hours, etc., that is a kind of stress for many people.
You certainly have a great responsibility for the patients in your care. You turned down, for example, the opportunity to take a chair in psychiatry at an American university in 1974. How difficult a decision was that? Was it indeed tempting to go to the States and work there?
Well, to a certain extent it was difficult because I got an attractive proposal. And I had been in the USA and in the UK, etc. And they offered me facilities which I did not have here. But at that time, I said, well, I have to stay in Holland for the Dutch war victims. There are so many, really so many.
What kind of numbers were you dealing with?
Well, in 1976, there was a report for the government. And it was stated that in Holland there are at least 100,000 people who have to be regarded as victims. 20,000 of them are in need of intensive psychotherapy. But that could not be realized. And even now, nearly 10 years later, there are many more. Because people who were not regarded as victims at the age of 30... became victims at the age of 40. And I'll give you an example. Especially the children who were in Japanese concentration camps in Indonesia during the war, who were 2 years, 3 years, 4 years of age, or even 12 or 15, they were well for many years. And now that they are at the age of 40, they nearly all decompensate. They cannot continue their life as vital as before. Another group is the group of children from people who were friends of the Germans in wartime. So the so-called NSB children, the children of Dutch SS people, who suffered from the fact that they are children of these people and who, as children at school, always heard, oh, you are a child of Mr. So-and-so, etc. And that is a group of 200 young people, 40 years of age nowadays, who are suffering.
Well, with your retirement coming up on June the 1st, although, as you say, you will continue in psychiatry for some years yet, how do you see the future of the work that you've pioneered over the last 40 years?
Everything will depend on the fact whether the government, the Dutch government, can help me to train some people, some colleagues and friends who can take over my techniques. But you cannot learn this out of a book. You have to do that together. I do it every evening with medical students, young psychologists, but I need a few successors who can convey the essence of the message to other colleagues. And let me conclude in this way that the essence of my technique is a combination, an efficient combination of the essence of psychoanalysis, the essence of psychodrama. You must be a drama specialist too. And the essence of the so-called satiation process, the repetition with the help of the modern technique, cassettes, video cassettes, etc., to see and to know and to feel again What was in your mind in the subconscious state during the trips we do with the deep going technique?
Professor Jan Bastiaans, Dutch pioneer in the recognition and treatment of the so-called KZ or concentration camp syndrome. He was talking to Susan Calland. We also heard from the orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, conducted by Sir Malcolm Sargent, playing a portion of Frédéric Chopin's Grand Valse Brillante. Well, that's it. That was Talking To. I hope you'll join us again at the same time next week.